Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Fonterra Debt Investor Update. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Matt Wilshire from ANZ. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. On behalf of Fonterra, ANZ and Westpac, welcome to Fonterra's Debt Investor Call for an update on the FY 2022 annual results. Fonterra has also released their Sustainable Finance Framework last week. The investor presentation and Sustainable Finance Framework have been circulated prior to this call. However, it can also be found on Fonterra's NZX website under the announcement section. At the end of the presentation, there will be an opportunity for Q&A. I will now pass over to Simon Till, Director Capital Markets at Fonterra. Thank you, Simon.
Thanks, Matt, and good afternoon to everybody. Thanks very much for taking the time to join us for this update. In the room with me, I've got Mark Rivers, who is probably one of your last formal duties, Mark, before you retire in a couple of weeks. Also really pleased to introduce Chris Rowe, who's going to be our acting CFO, and also Gary Phillip, who's Head of Sustainability Performance and Reporting, and also from our Treasury team, got Mark Woodward and Patrice Hamilton. So I'll turn over to you, Mark.
Great. Thank you, Simon, and thanks everybody for joining. We want to take you through today a little bit of the overview of our FY22 annual results, also take you through the sustainability strategy and our sustainable finance framework. But just starting with the FY22 results, and if you've got the pack with you, I'm going to start with slide four. It was quite a good year last year that we wrapped up. Very strong results, both in terms of milk price delivered to farmers, which is great news for farmers, but also for the New Zealand economy, of a 9.30 milk price, as well as a very strong earnings result with a normalised profit after tax of $591 million, which is in line with last year, but remarkable in an environment of such a much higher milk price this year than the year prior. And that allowed us to announce a dividend of 20 cents per share. So overall, very pleasing results, particularly in light of such a strong milk price environment. And not to mention all of the other challenges in the operating environment in terms of COVID and all of the other things going on, but very pleasing results overall. Next slide five, just to take you through a little bit of what's going on in the overall dairy market. This past year has seen quite a remarkable rise in the milk price. This is really driven by pretty steady demand for milk across the markets, but in particular, I would say the driver has been a very tight supply conditions, not only in New Zealand, but also in Europe, which has all been very supportive of pricing. And so we've gone up basically about $2 almost from a $7.54 last year to $9.30 a milk price this season. But what's also remarkable is not only the absolute rise in the milk price, but on slide five of the graph on the right-hand side, it shows the pricing relativity dynamics, which is an important driver for understanding earnings. So within our, as we collect a bucket of milk, we have optionality to turn that into various products. We have a process of milk price formula to calculate the milk price, which is paid as the farm gate milk price to farmers. That's based on a basket of five commodity products, so primarily whole milk powder, skim milk powder, butter, and the like. And so those prices have gone up. That's reflected in the blue line. However, there are other products that we turn the milk into which do not inform milk price, and those prices have gone up even higher, and that's reflected in kind of the light green line there at the top. Now, what that means is that effectively the blue line is effectively the cost of goods for selling the products, which are reflected in the green line. And so that has been quite a favorable earnings outcome for us, particularly in the latter half of the year, and especially in the last quarter of the year. So that explains why We had a year where we had not only a strong milk price delivered, but also quite a healthy set of earnings, driven by those favorable pricing relativities or stream returns. And so on slide six, that all culminates then in a total P&L. And when you look at some of the main items driving the P&L, so volume actually down year on year, and that's just on the back of lower milk collections, as well as a little bit of higher inventory that we're holding at the end of the year. And in spite of lower volume, revenue up 11%. And so that, of course, shows you the impact of pricing, more than making up for that volume down. Cost of goods up 12%, but not as much as price has gone up. And so that's helped gross profit and gross margins. Operating expenses under some pressure, given the high inflationary environment that we are all very conscious of, as well as a few charges that we took with some of the brands, and so all of that leading then to a normalized EBIT of 4%, better than last year, and 1% in line with last year, and normalized EPS of 34 cents. We'll just go through to the next slide, slide seven, which I find a very helpful slide to show where the earnings come from. This is a bit of an X-ray slide, which shows, first of all, the breadth of the portfolio that we have to operate in, which has proven to be quite useful, particularly during periods of high volatility like we've gone through with COVID and the like. So we sell our milk across three major geographies. And you can see it's fairly balanced in terms of volumes across those three geographies. Asia Pacific, which includes Southeast Asia, that includes Australia, New Zealand. Then EMENA, which is kind of the rest of the world, and then Greater China. So volume fairly balanced across the three regions, but also through the three channels that we sell the milk through. So ingredients channel being very important, food service, and our consumer channels. And you can see each of the regions have a bit of a different profile across those three channels, but that's also helps with the diversification. So looking back on this past year in terms of what was driving earnings, this was very much a year for the ingredients business, which performed really well across all three regions. And the main driver for that is those pricing relativities that I was showing on the earlier slide. The benefit primarily shows through in ingredients. Food service and consumer businesses, however, felt more of the margin pressure driven by the higher milk price. There's always a bit of a lag effect in a rising milk price environment for the ability of those businesses, food service and consumer, to pass on those price increases to their end customers. And so hence a bit more margin pressure on those business lines as we go through. Within consumer, just to double click within that a little bit, you had some businesses within consumer which actually performed quite well this past year. And there I'd point out Soprole, our Chilean business, had quite a strong year, which shows up in the EMENA line. Australia and New Zealand also had pretty good years, which shows up in the Asia Pacific line. However, we had some markets which had extraordinary pressure on them. And probably the one that sticks out the most is Sri Lanka, which had quite a phenomenally difficult year this past year. Speaks to the advantage of having a portfolio, so you can have a basket of those different markets. But Sri Lanka had quite some difficulties with impacted quite heavily by COVID, effectively with tourism being pretty much decimated, remittances with borders being closed, and so those two represent about 40% of their GDP. So we have quite an important consumer business there. With quite successful brands, but that impacted that country's ability to generate foreign currency, and so ultimately led to the currency having to float and devalue, which is reflected as a negative result within those pieces. So again, helpful to have a strong portfolio so we can adapt to the different economic winds as they blow. And very much a year. And if you compare it to last year, You would have seen actually that it's the food service business that was the driver for earnings from Greater China in particular. And so again, quite a contrast from this year, this most recent year to the year prior to that. Just on the next slide, slide eight, so one of the things that we've been working on very much these past few years has been to strengthen the balance sheet. And you can see the improvements that we've made over these past few years, particularly in the net debt position, which has steadily improved since the peaking in 2018. And we've, over that period, managed to lower our leverage down to a low of 2.7 from our high of 4.6 debt to EBITDA. However, this most recent year, we've ticked up a little bit again at the end of the year. But the driver for that is something that's quite temporary. It's driven by working capital, in particular inventory. And so what's happening there was in the course of the year, went through a period of, as we got into the second half, after quite a dry summer, we suddenly saw the weather improve and we had a bit of a surge of collections on the one hand, got a number of factors coming in, higher collections, just as demand was starting to soften a little bit in China, which was going through its tightening COVID restrictions, shipping disruptions, and then within New Zealand, we were going through our own little wave of COVID, which reduced our flexibility on the manufacturing side. So as a result of that, we ended up with a bit more product than we would have otherwise liked. Now, the good thing about having a strong balance sheet is it gives you optionality and choice. And so our decision at that point was to, rather than kind of dump the milk on the market, which would have, of course, adversely impacted milk price, we decided to hold on to it and sell it off in a more disciplined manner, which we've been in the process of doing. But it meant that at the end of the year, we were left with a higher inventory position than we would have liked, so impacting these metrics. But we're actually in pretty good shape as we enter the new year now in terms of working down that that excess inventory and selling that in a financially disciplined manner. And we expect that the metrics will improve in the current year. And you see that on played out on slide nine, just the impact of the working capital. So our net debt position at the end of last year, at the end of FY21, was $4.3 billion. It ticked up to $5.3 billion, and the big driver of that is that increase in working capital, which went up $1.6 billion. Within that, inventory was $1.2 of that, and 0.8 of that was price, and the remainder was volume. I'm going to hand over to you, Simon, for capital investors.
Yeah, so just a couple of slides here on capital and funding. So the first one there, slide 10, just shows the profile over the last 5 years, and in particular how we've significantly reduced that capital investment envelope. And you can see there quite a significant portion has been around our central capital. Looking forward, and I'll talk about the strategy slide a few slides on, but we, aligned to that, we are looking to increase the total amount of capital invested, but important to understand that that will still be determined or subject to our total capital management. And, we have on a debt to EBITDA basis, we have that long-term target of 2.5 to 3 times. Clearly it can move around a bit year on year, but that's the guiding discipline as well that we will continue. Onto the next slide, just thought it would be useful to provide a little bit more context around some of our investment in sustainability. So this has been obviously ongoing, and as part of the strategy, it's a significant portion going forward as well. But you can see there in the top bars, it just really emphasises that from our point of view, when we look at emissions, we've got scope 1 and scope 2 that make up about 9%, and scope 3 make up a significant portion, and Gary will talk to that a little bit more. And just giving you some, perspective there on how we're looking to manage the movement away from coal, and just looking at the investments we've done, Te Awamutu, and also what we've got coming up, and just the impact that will have. And just the point there, you'll note that if we look at Te Awamutu versus the other ones, that was quite a significant reduction for a lower capital cost, And the key reason for that was that that was a conversion of existing boilers. The other, Stirling and Waitara, are basically replacements. So that was just the basis there. On to the next slide, slide 12, just a bit of a reminder update on our funding position. This is the slide we put in each year. So you can see there that the strategy continues to be the same. We have essentially our core debt funded by our bonds and with the bank facilities providing the capital for the seasonal profile. And you can see, typically at the end of the year, we have very low drawings in our bank facilities, but as Mark pointed out, we were carrying a bit more seasonal debt effectively with the working capital, so that's why they were drawn. And then the bank facility maturity profile, we roll those out every year, so we continue to keep good maturity. Likewise on the bonds, and I'm sure you appreciate we haven't actually issued bonds for the last 3.5 years as they've been maturing with the deleveraging. We've just been repaying those, and you can start to see we've got a little bit maturing this year and then some larger ones in FY24-25. So if we look at the next slide, this is just a recap of the overall strategy slide that we put in at the annual result last year. And just wanted to call out a couple of key comments. The first one there in the sort of the right-hand graphic, we talk about investment profile, and that's over the period to 2030. And just really wanted to reiterate again that this is our plan, but it's subject to obviously having the capacity in the envelope. So, we will continue to apply that both from a discipline with our debt to EBITDA and also gearing ratio targets. And just a comment on the distribution of funds. So that was obviously put in place as part of that long-term strategy, and key assumptions around that were the divestment of our business in Chile, the Soprole business, and also some potential capital release from our Australian business, which we updated at our last annual result, which was that we will made a decision to continue to hold 100% of that. So again, any decision on what that magnitude will look like will obviously be dependent on a number of factors. So obviously just the progress or how the Chile divestment works out, and then just the overall strength and position of both our earnings and balance sheet at the time. So that will be subject to something in the future. So on to the next section, I'll pass over to provide a bit of context on sustainability strategy.
Thanks very much, Simon. Good afternoon, everyone. So we're now moving on to the section beginning at slide 14, and I'll just start at slide 15. So first thing to be aware of here is that having taken a strategic decision to lead in sustainability, our sustainability strategy is not separate, but rather integrated into our business strategy. And the way that we present that now is we use the internationally recognised six capitals. So we're looking at people and culture, we're looking at nature, we're looking at the relationships we have with a wide range of stakeholders we interact with. We want to make use of our intellectual capital, our assets and infrastructure, and our financial, and so far we've focused very much on financial capital. But if we look at these, we've expressed our aspirations for the long term, and we've also identified priority activities that we are progressing. So for example, in the people and culture space, we want to be able to retain, develop, and attract the best talent that we can. And to be able to do that, we need to provide them with a safe and healthy and inclusive place to work. So we're focused very much on health and safety and the diversity and inclusion of our culture. And we're also continuously developing people's skills. And we're signed up to the Skills Pledge in New Zealand. In the nature space, our aspiration is to demonstrate that dairy can be a net positive contributor to nature. And to support that, some of the key priority activities is leading the transition to net zero greenhouse gas emissions, talk a bit more in detail about that in the following slides. We're also out there supporting our farmers as they invest on farm and adopt practices that are leading from a dairy farming perspective, and leveraging our science and innovation skills so that we can solve environmental challenges both on and off the farm. And if you want to read more about that, there is a link to our sustainability report, which was published as part of an integrated suite of reporting just a few weeks ago. The key thing about thinking about those capitals is that if we look at slide 16, we have to think about our impacts on those capitals across the entire value chain. So we can have a positive impact and therefore seek to maximise it. We could have a negative impact and we seek to minimise it. If we start thinking at the right-hand side of the value chain, that's where the revenue comes in. And as a cooperative selling nutrition, we're in the very fortunate position that we're actually in business to provide something good for society. And dairy nutrition is internationally recognised by governments and health experts as providing a unique source of nutrition. We're investing in R&D to actually maximise that nutrition and what we can do with it. And in particular, looking at the way it can support health and well-being. We're also very much focused on making sure that it is safe and of high quality, fundamental in the food industry, and 100% manufacturing sites are now certified to a leading standard on food safety and quality. To be able to do that, dairy is a highly nutritious product, but it's actually also a very perishable product. So in our manufacturing systems, we actually use quite a lot of energy to turn that perishable product into something that's safe, has a long shelf life, and can be moved around the world very efficiently. As a result of that, though, we do use quite a bit of energy in our manufacturing processes, and hence the reason why that is a focus for greenhouse gas reduction. Back on the farm, our cooperative model means that we are focused on returning the value from the milk that we're selling around the world back to the farmers, which flows on into rural communities. And we're also focused on supporting those farmers in a variety of different ways to improve practices on the farm that are valued by the consumers that actually consume our products. And some of the key things there are caring for animal well-being, making sure that we are caring for the environment, and some specialist attributes that are actually highly valued by the consumer. And then to support that, we are independently benchmarked by a variety of different organisations, some of which we participate in on a voluntary basis, some of which are undertaken by organisations looking to pursue sustainability goals like the World Benchmarking Alliance. If we move on to slide 17, we can focus a little bit more on greenhouse gas emissions. And our overall aspiration is to be net zero by 2050. We start from a fairly strong position as one of the lowest carbon dairy product providers in the world. But we know that we can't slow down there. We've got more work to do. And if we look at that, first of all, from a manufacturing perspective, in the manufacturing space, we look to optimise our transportation and distribution. Now that means both efficiently collecting the milk from the farm to the factory, but also from a very low carbon perspective, distributing that milk product around the world. And as Simon mentioned earlier, International freight is a very small part of our overall reported emissions. Our big focus is on that energy and emissions arising from our manufacturing processes. And the two main approaches to that are, first of all, focusing on energy efficiency. Energy efficiency gives us an immediate benefit. It reduces our emissions and it also reduces cost. But it gives us a secondary benefit in that by improving our energy efficiency, it helps reduce the energy load at our manufacturing sites and prepares us for the transition to alternative sources of energy. Second part of the puzzle is transitioning those energy sources. And the big focus there, of course, is removing our last use of coal manufacturing sites in New Zealand. And we've mentioned a few sites that have already been transitioned in that space. The most recent one is Stirling, where we are currently preparing for a go-live later this calendar year. In the on-farm space, we already start from a very low footprint on-farm, and that has come by virtue of being a pasture-based farming model, very efficient practices by our farmers, and we continue to support those practices on-farm because that is the big levers that they can continue to focus on in the coming years. But the next big reduction is actually going to come from solving the methane problem. And that's a space where we are currently investing in research and development, looking at a range of different solutions, all of which are currently at different stages of development. And the key thing about any of these solutions is for them to be successful, they have to actually be good for the environment, so they've actually got to work and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. They actually have to be good for the cow from her health and her productivity perspective. They have to be good for the farmer because it has to be practical and cost-effective for the farmer to make use of the solution. And finally, they actually have to be good for the milk as well, and in that we must be able to retain safe food with a good composition to make a full range of products. This year, from a reductions perspective, our Scope 1 and 2 emissions are about 11.2% below our FY18 base, well on track for our 30% reduction by 2030. If we look at how we go forward on that, it's very much about investment in the capital development of sites, so infrastructure, and investment in research and development to progress those greenhouse gas solutions. And back to you, Simon.
Thanks very much, Gary. So the next section is on the sustainable finance framework, and I'll just make a few comments on this before we open up for questions. So as Matt mentioned in the introduction, we released this last Monday. So very pleased. It's been obviously a lot of work goes into this, so very grateful for the work and the team has done. In terms of the purpose, clearly we have an objective as part of our approach to funding that we want to align our funding strategy with the broader sustainability approach of Fonterra. And our long-term goal is clearly to be able to issue sustainable debt going forward. So most likely, this framework covers both use of proceeds and sustainably linked instruments. As we noted here and on the next few pages, it's our intention that the most likely will be starting with use of proceeds, so the green bond structure. But as we go forward, we do expect to do both our bank facilities and bonds, you know, in a sustainably linked instrument structure. And clearly, the targets that we will use will make public at the time. So in terms of just the next couple of pages, it's just really around the use of proceeds and on just some of the key points there. Probably just worth noting there, I think the reporting commitments are very much standard. In terms of our SPO or external review, we used ISS Corporate Solutions. They've done work in our industry, so that was one of the key reasons that we're attracted to them. Slide 22 and 23 are just really around the eligible green assets. And just a couple of comments on 23. So we've put there a sort of just an indication of the both the categories and the amount that we have already invested in over the last 3 years. So that's the 183 million, and then provided an estimate for the next 2 years of just over 300 million. Now clearly that can move around a bit, so they are estimates and they're still subject to some projects being finalised, but that will give us, you know, by end of FY24 over 500 million that would be eligible for those use of proceeds. So there's a couple more slides there just for background in the appendix, but in terms of formal presentation, we'll pause there. And actually very happy to go to questions now. Thank you.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Matthew Tan with OCBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I would like to check in terms of your total cost and total debt. What sort of percentage are those attributed to US dollar, and how have you been managing those FX volatility? Thanks.
Yeah, so in terms of the, I guess, the source of those, you'll see on slide 12, we provide a breakdown of the source currency there. So you can see US denominated debt capital markets is around 16%. Our policy is very much to bring debt back to New Zealand dollar equivalent. In some cases where we have local assets, we will naturally hedge, but if that's not applicable, then we will look to hedge them back to New Zealand dollars.
What about in terms of operating costs?
Sorry, can you say that again?
Operating costs. What about your total operating costs? What sort of percentage are those attributed to USD, or is that entirely zero?
Sorry, the vast majority of our revenues are generated through our ingredient business in US dollars, and they are hedged back to New Zealand dollars on a progressive basis. What's also really important in terms of the structure of this business is that those same revenues and FX rates generate the milk price, which forms our cost of goods. So there's a balance between what we're achieving on the revenue side and the core cost of goods line.
Which effectively means the farmer takes the FX
risk.
Yeah,
the farmer. The FX risk passes the farmer.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from Simon Pannett with Harbour Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Oh, good day. Question for Brian. On page, I think it's 15, the chart of the value chain, just there's a statement there about non-GMO. I just want to check on the boundary of that statement and how that could interact with any solutions to methane.
Okay, so yeah, so at the moment, New Zealand's in the privileged position where no GMO has been released into the environment, and what that allows us to do for New Zealand-produced products is to have them independently certified as non-GMO project verified, which is an attribute that's valued by certain parts of the world from a product perspective. I think where you're going is long term, some of the solutions that might come out of research and development may involve some kind of genetic changes to cows. So at the moment, we're making use of the natural strength that New Zealand's got. We are monitoring that, but at the moment, it's a livestock improvement, improving the genetics of the herd that is the main focus for us in New Zealand.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I was also cows, but also feeds too. There might be, yeah. But thank you.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Michael Yang with Bank of China New Zealand Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi. I just want to ask just given that in terms of the e-feed, is Great China that contribute a lot to your revenue? But for this year, the 2022, there's a thing that...
Could you repeat the question?
Hello, can you hear me?
Not very well, Mark.
Could
you just say that again?
Yeah, sorry, I think that's for the Great China side, that's it has some great contribution that to your EBIT, so revenue. I think that Great China is a great contributor to that. But for this year, 2022, it changed a lot over taken by the Amina. So I'm just wondering, is there any strategy change from the Great China side? And are you using the RMB that's for the settlement or for the sales that's between New Zealand and China?
Yes, if I understand the question, basically our exposure to China and whether there's any change in strategy and that sort of thing. So I would say, no, there's no change in strategy. China is an important market for us. And of course, what is important with our strategy is that we have a balanced portfolio, that we are exporting our milk to, obviously, those markets that are open to us. And China's a very important customer for us. It's open to us. As is Southeast Asia, it tends to be sort of emerging markets where the trade barriers allow us actually to participate. But the markets will go in and out really depending on sort of circumstances in the markets. And so this past year is one where we've seen China probably pull back a little bit, and we'll probably see that at the moment, just with COVID restrictions and those sorts of things. Whereas other markets have kind of stepped into that a little bit, but that can really change from month to month, from year to year. Our strategy is really to sell the milk to the customers that want it the most, basically, right? And up until now, China's been a great customer for us. We're sort of it's almost our domestic market in some ways, if you can think of it that way. But I think there are a lot of other markets which also have a lot of potential, and maybe one of the big strategic changes that happens over time is we're kind of coming out of a period where we've seen the amount of milk being produced in New Zealand effectively more than double since formation of Fonterra, and looking forward, we expect that to actually start to decline. And so what that will mean is that from year to year, we will have to, decide who do we sell the milk to, basically, right? And it will be those customers that value our attributes the most, because ultimately our strategic goal is to get as much value per drop of milk as possible.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Wilshire for any closing remarks.
Thank you, Ashley. Thank you for joining today's Fonterra Debt Investor Call. If you do have any follow-up questions or feedback, please come through to your ANZ or Westpac representative. Lastly, a recording of today's presentation will be released on Fonterra's website. Thank you.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.